Hello, everyone, and welcome to North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White. North Coast is blessed with some amazing songwriting talent. And through this process, we're going to peel back the curtain and we're going to shine some light on the process through which these songs actually get made, from the first spark of inspiration to that final polished track.
Hello. I have the pleasure of being here with Gabrielle McCrae, half of the local duo, the Horsenecks, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, plays banjo, guitar, fiddle. Harmonica? Did I hear you play harmonica?
I don't play harmonica. No. I wish.
Anyway, welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Thanks for coming. Let's get into your background a little bit. I mean, can we start at the beginning?
Sure.
When you were a kid, did you grow up in a musical family?
I did, yeah. My parents both are musicians. Not the kind of music that I ended up playing, but they played a variety of different stuff. It dabbled in a lot of kinds of music, but I'd say the main thing that they really were into was sort of jazz and blues. And my dad's an excellent guitar player. My mom's a great singer. She also plays clarinet and piano and
nice.
Mandolin. Yeah.
So you might have rebelled in terms of the genre. But
sure, yeah.
You didn't rebel about the music.
Yeah, my dad was pretty dismayed when I first got into old-time music. he's come around, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you picked up an instrument and decided you were going to master it?
Don't think that's what I was thinking, but as a kid, I sort of messed around with a bunch of different instruments, but wasn't, you know, serious about them, or didn't really have, you know, any kind of discipline. I plunked around the piano. My mom would show me stuff occasionally. And then, we sang in church choir too. So I think that was really probably the biggest thing, as a kid that kind of set me on a musical path was singing harmony in church choir.
Right.
I loved it. And then in our school choir too. I kind of was in a public school in Portland during a kind of a golden era for school funding for music. So we had a great music program. There's no band, but there was an awesome choir, and the music teacher just did a lot with the resources that she had. So she got my sister started on violin, just got us going, you know, in the choir, and did a really amazing job. Her name is Miss Underhill.
Thunderhill.
Yeah.
Good name.
And I think she was still working at that school, Boise Elliott Elementary, and until pretty recently.
Yeah. And so kind of you settled on the violin?
Well, before that, I played in middle school, I played flute, silver flute. That was I'd say that was the first instrument I got any kind of good at. I got, you know, to where I could read music on it, and, you know, I played in the school orchestra. But then I soon realized it wasn't very cool and decided to switch to guitar. So when I was 12 or 13, something like that, I picked up guitar. And my dad was, you know, great player. I wouldn't say he was a great teacher. We really butted heads over me trying to learn guitar from him. But he did show me a lot of great stuff. And just, you know, watching and listening to him play, I learned a lot. And then in high school, I got exposed to old-time music. And right around the same time, a neighbor gave me a banjo.
Oh, nice.
I think he was moving or something, and he just had it, you know, in his basement. So started playing banjo in high school. And then I was lucky enough to have a group of friends, you know, my sisters and... you know, a tight group of girls that I went to high school with who, we were all really getting excited about old time music at the same time. So we're learning together. And my sister and my friend Sophie already, you know, were classically trained on the violin. So they really could pick it up pretty fast. They just had, you know, they already had that, the instrument, knew the instrument really well. And so just learning that style was not a huge leap for them, you know, at that age. And so for a while I was playing guitar and banjo. And I thought, well, I'm not going to I'm not going to play the fiddle because my sister and my best friend already played it so well, you know. So I'll be a guitar and banjo player. But, you know, then I got a hold of a fiddle and was like, well, I just want to play a tune. Just want to learn to play one tune, you know. And then, of course, you learn one and you want to learn another and just, you know, went on from there. So, yeah.
So at what point did you actually form any sort of band around
the It was right around then, high school, with those girls. We had like about 12 different band names and probably like 3 gigs total.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you were contrarians in the era of punk rock, it sounds like.
Right, yeah. But,
and the rest of your classmates were probably really into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was like a little kind of alternative school. So it was a pretty eclectic mix of, mm-hmm. you know, what people were into. But yeah, grunge was still pretty big then. So
at what point did you try your hand at writing something new, something that nobody had taught you to play or you'd heard before?
Let's see. I was probably in my early 20s, living in Asheville, North Carolina. I don't remember what the first song was that I tried to write, but I think for me I'm inspired to write songs when I feel bored with everything that I'm playing, you know, right. with the songs that I know, you know. And I've written a few songs, and I didn't do anything with them for a long time until much later on.
So what's your style of writing? I mean, do you collaborate? Do you work on your own?
I've done some collaborating, and I really like it. I would like to do more of it, but usually on my own. Me and my husband have written a couple together, and then I've written with my friend Katie Claiborne, Katie Claiborne and Hallie Anderson, who... we actually did a little songwriting retreat together a few years ago, and it was such a great experience. And we got a pile of songs out of it that we still hope to record together.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. So when you sit down to write a song, where do you start? I mean, some people start with lyrics, some people start with a chord sequence, some people start with a story or a melody.
I have most often started with like a melody and chord structure together. Lyrics are kind of the hardest part for me. I'll get one line or, you know, a verse and a chorus that I like, and then it's really hard for me to flesh the rest of it out. But yeah, I think it's like when I first hear music, when I hear a song, the first thing I hear is the chord progression. That's like what I focus in on. So that's kind of where I go. And sometimes it's like not till much later that I'm like, oh, that's what this song is about. You know, I haven't even listened to the lyrics. So I think just because that's what my ear is drawn to, that's where I usually start. But one of the cool things about that collaboration was that we'd give each other song challenges. So it was totally different from the way I was used to writing songs. It would be like, you know, we'd set a song challenge for each other at the beginning of each day. I'd be like, okay, you have to write a song that, you know, has someone's name in it, or you have to write a song that is a story song, or write a song that's in an open tuning. It could be anything, you know.
Yep.
It was just really like a jumping off point, but it was really cool to have that to work with, you know, to just approach it differently than I ever had before.
So I assume you use the guitar to write?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've written fiddle tunes as well, like instrumental. But... yeah, when I'm writing a song with lyrics, usually the guitar. Yeah.
You've partnered up with Barry Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Is he also your husband?
He is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been married for
He's from the UK originally.
He is,
right?
Yeah. Liverpool.
How did you guys connect? Was that in Asheville?
No, it was actually at an electronic dance music festival in England. I was on a tour with my sisters. We played together in a band for a while called the McRae Sisters. And we were on tour over there, and his band was playing the same festival. It was like a giant festival with a bunch of different stages, all, you know, mostly electronic music. And then there's this one little stage that was called the Folk Barn. And that was where they stuck all the folk acts. So we were, our bands were on next to each other. And it was a super muddy festival. It was like it had been a really, really rainy summer that summer in England. And so it was really a mess there. Like you really couldn't walk around. You'd sink into the mud, like way up to the top of your boots. Like we all had tall rubber boots on and it was just really hard to get anywhere. So we ended up just staying in one spot for the whole time. Yeah. So we started talking, got to know each other. And then ended up in a few of the same places on that tour and kept in touch. So,
are you responsible for bringing him over here?
I am, yeah.
Did you come to Astoria? Or?
We came to Portland first. Yeah.
That was probably a good way for him to acclimatize.
Yeah, yeah. Although we already had friends out here. I was playing in a band with Luke and Katie at the time called Hook and Anchor. And so we'd come out here a lot. As soon as he was in Portland, we were starting to come out here and, got to know the scene out here a little bit. So
great.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what inspires you.
Okay.
How does that work? You just, something hits you out of the blue?
You know, I think, I didn't realize this until COVID, but I think like the biggest source of inspiration for me is other musicians, seeing mm-hmm. other people play live. Being moved by someone's music at a show or in a jam setting, that is really what like stokes a little fire in me, and sometimes it'll be like, direct inspiration, something about the way this song sounded made me want to write something that tried to sound like that, And of course, usually it's not going to sound like that. It's going to sound like you're going to sound like yourself, mm-hmm. even if you are taking direct inspiration from someone else. But yeah, during COVID, I realized I had a really hard time figuring out what to play or what to write. And I realized it was because we weren't going out to see music, So that was a really valuable lesson, Now we have a almost 4-year-old daughter, and it's we have to be a lot more conscious about making that happen, going out to see music. Whereas it used to just be like, we'd go out every week, multiple times a week mm-hmm. to hear music. But it's a good, reminder that we just need to make it happen, prioritize it. So.
You're listening to North Coast Songwriter Spotlight. I'm your host, David White. And today we're speaking with Gabrielle McCrae, vocalist, multi-instrumentalist, and member of the duo, The Horsenecks. Can you walk us through the creation of a specific song, something that stands out as an example of your process?
Sure. Let's see. The one that I had planned to play was it's called Heel and Toe, and I think it's got these kind of like incomplete, I don't know what you'd call that, suspended chords or not normal chords, if you will.
That's a major seventh, I think. Yeah.
And so I guess that probably was kind of came from hanging around with Luke and Katie a lot and, hearing the Hackles play. Yeah. They use a lot of those kinds of voicings. And then this actually was during COVID. I remember sitting down and I had been struggling with just trying to support someone in my life who was struggling. And that like sort of helpless feeling that you have when somebody you love is hurting and there's like nothing you can do, other than just try to be there for them, And I felt like that person was just like off in the woods. Like I couldn't get to them. Then the first line is you're off in those woods again where I can't find you. And that was like, that line came complete,
Right.
And then it actually was, this is one that was really easy for me to fill in the lyrics because it was such a strong sentiment that I was feeling,
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear it. That's
all good. Right. Have a sip of tea real quick. woods again where I can't find you. String on the branches, trail the breadcrumbs behind you. Wish I had a raincoat I could give you for the weather. Wish I could keep you inside where it's warmer.
Hearing you tell that story reminded me, my wife saw an interview that Stephen Colbert did with Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, and he asked Yo-Yo Ma, what is music? And he answered, it's energy.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer.
He didn't elaborate on that, but I think he was referring to it's the fact that it's energy in both the rooted in the idea of energy in physics, but also in spirituality.
Yeah, it can mean a lot of things.
And I got to thinking about that, and that your song is a good example of what I was thinking, which is it's energy, but it's a way of transforming emotion into energy that can be transmitted to other people.
Yes,
into their ears and straight to their heart if it's done. Well, and there's so many emotions that you can capture with music. That there's joy, there's sadness, there's grief, there's pathos, there's love,
hope. Yeah.
And if it's done well, I think that energy goes straight from your ears right into your heart. It gets processed by your head, of course, but.
Right.
And you mentioned electronic dance music, and that's kind of the most basic.
Mm-hmm.
Form of the music is energy because you can feel
you can literally feel the vibrations in your body.
But I'm not sure what emotion that really represents, but it certainly gets people out of their heads.
Yes,
I think into their bodies.
So, which is valuable.
So what's music to you? I mean, what does it mean to you?
I mean, I think all of that. I think that rings pretty true for me. You know. All the things you were talking about, getting out of your head into your body, or just feeling joy when you are playing music and it locks in, or when you can play it for someone and see or feel that it's doing something for them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of emotion in some of the more traditional tunes you do. It seems yeah. like there's a lot of longing and
yeah.
And joy, especially with the fiddle tunes. It mm-hmm. seems like that's uplifting.
Yeah, definitely.
Stuff. I can see why you'd be drawn to that.
Yeah. Yeah. The social side of it is huge for me too. I mean, that's what really what drew me to old time music is I've been playing on my own a lot, you know, as a teenager. I was like playing guitar and singing, you know, doing kind of a singer-songwriter thing. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot of old blues songs and I really loved that music, but I was just like doing it by myself and it was kind of boring and lonely. And
yeah.
and then I saw people playing string band music together and I was like, wow, now that looks like fun. Like, yeah. I want to do that. And that is such a huge part of, you know, specifically of the music that we play. That is, you know, it's so valuable, the community that comes along with it and the connections that you make, that like intergenerational community, which feels even more important now that we have a daughter. Yeah. And you can see those bonds, you know, being really important to her.
So you, with the Horsenecks, you guys have 4 solid LPs on the streaming services.
Yeah, 4 albums.
You're
yeah.
touring both nationally and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching as well, right?
Yeah, I give private lessons. Well, both of us do. And then, as I mentioned, I do the little toddler's music programs, like a parent-child music mm-hmm. class that... it's really just, you know, doing songs and musical games that, you know, yeah. that you can do with a kid. I'm actually doing it at the public library right now, which is great.
Nice.
In downtown Astoria. Yeah.
And you guys are doing a lot of gigs locally and regionally as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine some people who are listening to this, who are musicians or aspiring musicians, would say that you're living the dream, you know?
some version of it.
yeah, and that's a rare accomplishment, I think. And mm-hmm. but how do you react to me saying that? And if it's true for you, what are both the good parts and the bad parts of the life you chose in music?
Yeah, I'd say the hardest thing, which is not any kind of revelation, it's pretty predictable that, you know, the pretty unstable financially, you know, it's hard to, you know, income comes in these bursts and then you're not always sure when the next burst is going to mm-hmm. be. And, you know, it's hard to put money away for the future. It's hard to, you know, like we got really lucky being able to buy a home. We never thought we'd be able to. You know, we couldn't get a mortgage, and we ended up with a special situation. But, yeah, that, you know, that kind of thing. And then there's a whole, yeah, level, so many levels of logistics and, you know, paperwork. And it's almost like having a desk job sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, you know... I think it's worth it. It's, you know, there's been plenty of times when, you know, we thought, should we just call it quits? You know, when are we going to throw the towel in, you know? And then we look at our other options and we're like, nah, let's
don't
keep doing this.
Those, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I mean, I played in bands starting when I was 12 and 13, garage uh-huh. bands, playing awful music and and some fairly decent ones later on. But it was pretty clear to me, I think I just said to myself, there are a lot more talented people than you starving doing this.
Right. And there's a lot of untalented people making bank doing it too.
Yeah,
so.
yeah, but
it's not always about that.
So I always, and then I found myself the father of my daughter and soon after that, a son. So
yeah.
I kind of put my nose to the grindstone, but
yep.
now that I'm, retired and every day is Saturday, I get to start, you know, catching up again
awesome.
With the music.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we were lucky in that we were already doing this full time when we had a kid.
Yeah.
You know, we'd already been doing it full time for 10 years. I think if we had tried to, you know, if we had had our kid, you know, at the beginning of our musical relationship, it might not have worked out this way.
Yeah.
You know?
It
would have been a lot harder anyway.
Well, let's just wrap up with a couple of questions, simple okay. ones, I think. So what's next for you, do you think? What direction do you find yourself heading in?
That's a good question. We are asking ourselves that. I mean, I think in a broader sense, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, mm-hmm. Keep touring, keep recording, keep putting music out. In the immediate future, we're headed to the UK in a month. I'm going to do a tour over there. But I think me and Barry both are feeling like really more excited about collaborative projects. So I think we're going to try to make that a bigger part of our focus going forward.
Cool.
I've mentioned Luke Kidstein, Katie Claiborne a couple of times today. We play music with them a lot and live down the street from them too. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of played music together in different formations for, you know, over 10 years,
yeah.
but never like the four of us have never officially had a band, you know?
Yeah.
And for the last year or so, we've been playing at Obelisk Brewery every Thursday.
Yeah. I've got a few of those.
And happy hour type thing.
The only problem with that place is the acoustics are terrible.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we do our best. but that's been a really fun thing. And now we kind of have all this body of, you know, material that we mm-hmm. know really well together because of playing together almost every week. So we've talked about going into the studio and recording something with them. But as usual, we can never think of a band name. So right now the working title is Horkel because it's a cross between right. the Horsenecks and the Hackles. So we're using them until we can come up with something better.
Well, Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming. And that was really great. And thanks for showing up and being so open, sharing with us your musical journey. I look forward to seeing you and hearing you play around town. I wish I could go along on tours just to hang
yeah.
out. I miss the UK
since
I retired. Yeah. Anyway, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. And
thanks for having me.
You should feel really good about what you do, I think.
Thank you.
The way you communicate through music is a really great service to your fellow human beings on the planet, I think.
Thank you. Thanks for saying so.
If you'd like to hear more from Gabrielle and the Horsenecks, check them out on their website at horsenecks.net. You'll also find them on the streaming services such as Spotify and Amazon Music, and they have a YouTube channel. When the Horsenecks aren't touring, you'll often find them playing at Obelisk Brewing Company here in Astoria. So get out there and support local live music in this community. And that's a wrap for this edition of the North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White. If you would like to hear someone you know who's a songwriter interviewed on this program, drop me a line, dlwhite46@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.